The government agencies in the state of Oregon decided that his passing a polygraph was good enough to overcome the allegation by the little girl that he'd sexually abused her.
There's no way to know just by looking at someone whether or not they're sexually interested in children.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, and writer-producer of Criminal Minds, which is coming back.
Woohoo! So I hear, James, season 16, it's actually coming.
Yeah, it's going to be a little different, but it'll be great, of course.
Of course it will.
And we have most of the Criminal Minds family coming back.
As long as like Padgett Brewster, Joe Mantegna, my two favorites are coming back, I'm good.
They are. It's a wonderful thing.
Love it. Okay. So, and as you might have already guessed, I'm Jim's co-host, everyone. I am Francie Hakes. I'm a former state and federal prosecutor. I am not a writer producer on Criminal Minds.
But you wish you were.
But I wish I was. I think Criminal Minds, just speaking of Criminal Minds, is going to actually be this 10-episode serialized run on Paramount Plus, right, Jim?
It is.
That's very exciting. I know our listeners, or at least lots of them, love Criminal Minds, as does apparently everyone pretty much in the world. Since, if I'm not mistaken, Jim, it was like the number one streamed show in 2021 in the world.
In the world. 4.6 billion TikToks about Criminal Minds.
That's
that tells
crazy.
You there's a whole new generation of people watching it, which is an amazing thing. And
there is
an amazing thing to be part of it. It still is. So let's get going.
Yes. Let's get going on a worst case scenario, Jim. You know, we've had the last 4 weeks, we had really in-depth conversations about the terrible Uvalde school shooting with some real experts. And while I've been working on a different project at our production company, XG Productions, that I can't talk about yet, but I'll be excited to talk about when I can, I came across a case. I was doing some research about abuse at daycare centers, daycare facilities. And I came across an article out of the state of Oregon. Prosecutor Jamie Kimberly prosecuted this case. We'd certainly love to have her on as a follow-up to discuss this case since there's been a conviction. But
have we
so back
Googled
to
her address and phone number?
Well, I mean, I'm sure we can find her phone number at the DA's office or the state attorney's office, whatever they have in Oregon. But it's so much better if someone knows her personally.
Okay. All right.
And can, you know, connect her to us, you know, hit me up on Facebook or Instagram and let me know. But so back to the research. So I was doing research and I found an article about this horrific case. And Jim, I mean, it just made my blood boil because I do not understand how in this day and age this happens. So it turns out here's the kind of the quick recitation of the facts. In about 2016, a little girl who attended something called the Stinky Feet Daycare in Oregon made an allegation that the son of the owner, the son's name is Quinlan Hardin. She made an allegation, this little girl, that Quinlan Hardin had sexually abused her. And that began an investigation into the daycare. And for the next 2 years, the daycare continued to operate in spite of the fact that there was a little girl who had made an allegation of abuse. And then in 2018, there were two more children who came forward to make allegations of abuse. Eventually, police would discover that in addition to the initial child, there were four others who made allegations against this Quinlan Hardin.
And we know that if that's the number of people that came forward, chances are very high that there are a number of other people who
yes.
either came forward and didn't want to be named, came forward to their parents and the parents didn't want to get involved, or just never said anything to anyone.
No, and we know that happens. Like I said, this other project that I'm working on, we've got parents who there are allegations by a victim child that there are at least two other victim children that this child observed those children also being alone with the alleged offender. And the parents have just said they hope their kids forget. They just don't want them to be involved at all. So that's a really sad situation that we'll address at the proper time. But so you've got five victims eventually that go, that talk to police and talk about having been sexually assaulted by this Quinlan Hardin person at the daycare that was in the home he lived in, Jim, and owned and operated by his mom. Right. And he apparently lived upstairs. So as a grown man who lives upstairs to a daycare center, I call that a red flag. What do you think?
Yeah, right away. Definitely. The fact is, why is he still living at home? He's not working at this daycare, although he has apparently been given unfettered access to all of these children whenever he wants. And some say that he was basically one of the primary caregivers there, despite not being, one, ever trained, two, ever registered as a caregiver, and three, ever employed there.
No. And four, allegations were that multiple children say that they were alone in his bedroom in the home with Quinlan Hardin. And it nonetheless took the Department of Education and something called, what is it called? The Oregon Department of Human Services, at least a couple of years before they shut down this daycare. I do not understand why you err on the side of the daycare when there are multiple children. Well, let's face it, even one child making an allegation of child abuse. The first action ought to be, you are closed until we determine exactly what has happened here. And we're turning this over to, you know, police detectives who are hopefully trained in crimes against children.
Right. Well, the first report to any officials is in 2016. And the fact is that when they did arrest this offender, and we will definitely say his name. We don't normally like to say names of offenders, but we definitely want to protect the community if this asshole ever gets out again. But Quinlan
Hardin, or if other children now want to come forward after this, right. All this time has passed, they might.
But Quinlan Hardin and his mother, I believe, are both red flag people.
Yes. I believe Ciola Hardin is her name.
Ciola,
Jim.
Right. And let me just tell you, not only did she give unfettered access to all these children, all these very small children, to her son, she failed to report abuse when it was reported to her by children. And do you know what she did, Francie? And this is fucking pisses me off. She said to the child, it's okay, I'll take care of it. Don't tell your mom. And I'll take you to the dollar store and get ice cream for you if you don't tell.
So she knows her son has sexually interested in children. She knows her son has abused a child.
Not in jail.
Right.
Why?
Right.
Why is she
Why wasn't she prosecuted?
Free to walk the streets?
I don't know. Here in Georgia, Jim, that would have been considered party to the crime because she facilitated it. She helped him cover it up. I mean, that's part of the crime. She can be prosecuted for child molestation herself. What are they doing in Oregon?
She never gave him, she never registered him as someone who worked with the kids. They never did a background investigation on him. And certainly she never told the parents of not only this victim, but the other parents what was going on. And
you know what the licensing officials did, Jim?
What?
They gave him a polygraph, which I can't quite tell from the articles that I've read, but it sounds like maybe he passed the polygraph. And so they closed the case. Jim, let's talk about polygraph exams.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the skill of the administrator. Polygraph measures your heart rate, your galvanic skin response, your pulse. I think that might be the heart rate. Sorry. your breathing and any kind of jerky movements and stuff like that. They ask you
things that are involuntary that you really can't control.
Right. Exactly. It just measures those things because some people, when they are lying, feel stress as a result of it. And these are natural stress responses. So it's actually a tool used as an interview tool. In other words, it's not like a test. You give a test and somebody really just passes or fails. You interpret, the administrator interprets the things that are out of whack on this, you know, on this very, very sensitive machine, basically. So first of all, they ask a bunch of just norming questions, you know, things that nobody should get upset about. And they say, okay, this is the normal kind of movement you're going to get. And then
they set your baseline, basically.
And then they dial up or down the machine to see, you know, if there isn't much movement at all, they'll dial it up, up the sensitivity. If there's a lot of movement, they'll dial down the sensitivity. So a lot depends on where the baseline is. Secondly, how much experience the operator has is really important. Also, whether or not the person who is taking the test has any qualms at all about lying through his teeth. I mean, people are skilled pathological liars, and they some say if you're a psychopath, or even if you're psychotic, you might end up not actually giving any blips on the polygraph test. But the whole point is that once you get blips, you're supposed to be interviewed about them.
Right, about the questions to which you blipped.
Process, right, and that interview process is supposed to get down to, well, look, there are problems here on this question, and let's talk about that and why, and let's do it again and again and again. And I don't know if they did any of that.
I don't know if they did any of that, but I can tell you, Jim, one very famous case of a man who could easily defeat the polygraph was CIA spy, the biggest spy in the history of the CIA, Aldrich Ames, because during the quote mole hunt the CIA went on, because CIA officers were dying, they were being killed, they were being betrayed, whole operations were going down. And the CIA thought to themselves, I think we have a mole, you know, we got to figure out who's betraying us. It's someone inside the agency. So they went on what they call a mole hunt. And Aldrich Ames was one of the original suspects on the list because he had access to all the information that was part of what was being used to betray all these CIA people. And he passed multiple polygraphs during the mole hunt. He was taking money from the Russians and had been for years. And yet he passed polygraph after polygraph after polygraph. So a polygraph is not perfect. It can be meaningful, like you say, for interviews. And I think when you fail a polygraph, it can be especially illustrative, but it still requires proof. There's a reason it's not admitted into federal courts in this country, because it is not considered scientifically reliable enough. And yet, the government agencies in the state of Oregon decided that his passing a polygraph was good enough to overcome the allegation by the little girl that he'd sexually abused her. And so they closed the file, and kids keep going to the daycare. And what happens, Jim?
They keep getting molested and
exactly right.
raped. So here's the problem. The actual way to do this investigation is to immediately go out and interview all the parents, talk to all the parents, and interview all the children. Not by some administrator, by a child advocacy center, trained child interview expert.
They did have some interview experts in this case, Jim. I was pleased to see the children were sent to a child center. It doesn't call it a child advocacy center, but the description seems to me to be a child advocacy type center. So they did go there to interview the children.
And no other children came forward. Is that what you're saying?
No other children came forward. But here's my question, Jim. I mean, when you say that they should be interviewing all the children and all the parents, what about the children who went there 3 years ago or 5 years ago?
All the children. I mean, the children that he ever had access to.
They had had, I think this daycare had had a license since 2013. So every single child who ever attended that daycare certainly should have been questioned. So should neighbor kids, right? Anyone who lives in the neighborhood, right. Anyone who's been in contact with Quinlan Hardin should have been investigated. And maybe they were. This particular article didn't describe the full investigation. It's why we'd love to talk to Jamie Kimberly so we can ask the prosecutor about her evidence in the case. These five victims, though, Jim, testified at trial. Some of them were a little bit older now by the time the trial happened, and they were able to testify. One victim at sentencing told Hardin, "You stole my childhood. I'll never know what it's like to be a kid because of you." I mean, what a powerful statement by her. And she said she had questioned whether she deserved to be loved. Yeah. I mean, that offender tried to take away very valuable things from these children. And that's one of the terrible consequences of child sexual abuse is the consequences to the victim. I mean, is their life necessarily ruined? No, you and I have talked about that many times, Jim. It can be overcome. There's no question it can be overcome. But there are a lot of bad effects from children who are abused because it does. It causes all these issues. And one of the things that experts are studying now, Jim, is the effect of chronic sexual abuse on children's brain development. And what they have discovered is that chronic sexual abuse affects the brain the same way a violent car accident can damage a brain. I mean, it's shocking what child sexual abuse can do, what that kind of chronic trauma can do to a child's brain. And yet these people let this Quinlan Hardin take a polygraph and go back to living in the daycare center where he had a target-rich environment. I don't understand it, Jim. What are they thinking? These are the people charged by government that we, the taxpayers, pay to protect children, to license daycares. Shouldn't they be experts, Jim? I mean, I have to admit, it's something I hadn't really thought of in my career as a prosecutor. You think about schools, you think about after-school programs, but you don't necessarily really think about the licensing people. The people who are licensing these daycares and these foster homes, what's their level of training? Because they should know better.
Right. They should know better, and they should actually care about the children more than they, as you said, should care about licensees. But the fact is that they gave this woman a license, but did they not even check who else lives in the house? Shouldn't the laws be that anybody who lives on the premises of any daycare has to be registered?
But Jim,
investigated?
You're right. And they did ask Ceola Hardin whether Quinlan Hardin, after the first allegation, was still living at the home. And she said no. And so the licensing people said, "Oh, okay, great. He's no longer living there." Did anyone check? Did anyone go over there to inspect themselves? Did they investigate? The answer is no. And so he was able to stay there and able to continue molesting children. Now, fortunately, he was convicted at trial because all of these children testified about what he did to them. But Jim, in kind of, I think, a tragic turn in this case, and that concerns me about the status of the conviction. And again, I hope Jamie Kimberly will come on, is that just after this case, Quinlan Hardin was convicted and sentenced to quite a bit of time in jail, by the way. Around the same time, the U.S. Supreme Court was hearing a case about the constitutionality of what are called split verdicts, that is non-unanimous verdicts. Right. So some states, not many, but some states had where if 10 jurors agreed or if 8 jurors out of the 12 agreed, whatever the number was, then that was considered good enough for a conviction. And Oregon was one of them. And that was the case in these convictions. They were split verdicts. They were not unanimous. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very concerned. I assume he's already filed an appeal. And I'm very concerned about the status of his conviction. And I sincerely hope, given the seriousness of this case, that the prosecutor's office is going to retry him if they have to. Those children's memories should be just as good as they were. They've got prior transcripts of all the testimony to refresh everyone's recollections. I sincerely hope that they take the time, even though I know it's resource intensive, to try this case again, because this person was convicted of abusing multiple children who were the most vulnerable, who the state of Oregon had charged his mother with protecting. And she's not just not protecting them. She's letting him live there. And then she's taking kids to get ice cream as a reward for not telling their parents.
Which this I don't think there's any clearer evidence that she is part and parcel of this crime, that she actually not only knew about it and was a mandatory reporter and didn't report, but that she actually helped prevent law enforcement from getting involved. She actually obstructed this case. This entire case could have come out years earlier.
Yes.
Had she not done that, had she been a legitimate child care person.
I know, caregiver, they call it.
Yeah, caregiver, whatever. So I want to talk about, there's an article I wrote called Four Things Parents Must Know to Help Prevent Child Sexual Victimization. And I'm just going to skim over it because I think this is incredibly important. Four things. Most children are sexually victimized by someone they know. This is incredibly important. Most children are not victimized by stranger danger. They're victimized by people you give them access to. They are people you love and trust and care about. They are not monster predators.
They're in the circle of trust.
They are. And they do not look like what you would expect a sex offender to look like. And I'll just a caveat on that is every single place where children spend time, where children gathered, is what I call a target-rich environment that will, and I don't mean may, will attract sex offenders, child sex offenders. Understand, every single place your child goes and spends time is going to be a place that offenders are going to target. And these offenders are most often nice guy or gal, acquaintance offenders. They're not monster predators.
I'm sure no one thought Quinlan Hardin looked like a monster predator, because we know, Jim, everyone can tell what a predator looks like just by looking, right?
Right. No. And many times they're pillar of the community. Many times they're pillars of the community. And I think two perfect examples are Michael Jackson and Jimmy Savile. These are two people who were entertainers, who are top of the field in their countries and even around the world, and yet they were sexually interested in children and acted out on it.
Well, what about Larry Nassar? He's a perfect example of a pillar of community. He was abusing these girls right in front of their parents.
Right.
Literally.
And there are others like him.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
The next one, number two, is most children are sexually victimized through grooming. And grooming is nothing more than a bunch of behaviors that are geared at getting an offender access, authority, and control over a victim. Grooming can be aimed at children, their caretakers, their parents, and the community in general. And you have to look through all of that to see what's going on. When a child is groomed, you get what we call compliant victimization. Children don't necessarily run and yell and tell because they've been groomed. And what happened?
And maybe because they've been given ice cream as a reward to keep quiet.
In this case, the perfect example is that the mother of the offender gave them ice cream and presents so that they wouldn't report.
And Jim, what do you think the parents of those children had said in the past to every one of those kids about Ciola Hardin as they dropped those kids off at daycare?
Now, listen to Ciola. She's in charge.
She's in charge. Yep. Exactly. She's in charge. And so this authority figure is telling them not to tell and is giving them presents and making them feel special so they don't tell. And in the case, Jim, the defense attorney in the criminal case had the gall. I mean, what else can he say? But he had the gall in opening arguments to say the kids were lying, because why else would this have been going on for so long and no one told?
Right.
That's what happens in almost every case.
Asshole. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Asshole. Good one.
Okay.
Yeah, agreed.
So the fourth thing is that I suggest, I think Francie agrees with me, that every parent has to have a two-way conversation back and forth with their child about sex, grooming, and sexual victimization. Now, everybody wants to keep their child as naive as possible and, you know, as protected as possible. The problem is, if you are not able to be with your child 24 hours a day, then you cannot leave them vulnerable by thinking that naivety is going to protect them. That is not the case. It's unfortunate. But you can have a loving, caring, supportive conversation with them in an age-appropriate manner.
You can.
About what the dangers are out there. And the way I like to analogize this is, we all want to keep our kids safe. If you live on a busy street, you don't let your child run around and run across the street without warning them. What you do is you tell them that's dangerous. You don't cross the street alone. You take them to the corner. You hold their hand. You tell them, teach them how to look both ways, how to look for the line, the light to change, how to wait for a crossing guard, whatever it is. But we teach them and we do it with them until they can do it on their own. Why do you think it's safer to not let your child know that there's a risk out there, that there are people who seem good, who your parents think are good, but they may not be? And even good people that your parents love and trust could do something sexual with them. It's important that children are given the language to talk to their parents, the language and permission to talk to their parents about sex.
You're
so many times we give nonverbals. If it comes on TV, we turn it off. If parents are talking about it, they're hushed and they send the kids out of the room. If it's on social media or the internet, they get the kids away from it. So those are definitely nonverbals that tell a kid sex is not something I can talk to my parents about.
Well, and Jim, I get asked all the time by parents, especially parents of younger children, like daycare ages or, you know, 4 or 5 years old. They ask me, well, how do I talk to my kid? And I say, you know, it's really pretty simple. You need to make sure your child understands that no one has the right to touch them in a way that makes them feel uncomfortable or talk to them about things that make them feel uncomfortable. And if that happens, they should tell you right away.
Yeah, but
because
Francie,
it isn't their fault.
I know, but Francie, I'm afraid I don't agree with the uncomfortable language. I believe they have to be actually very specific because it could be uncomfortable to have somebody touch their shoulder, tell them they have to stay in line. I'd rather my kid tell me all those things. Right. But I know, but that's a talk for something else. This talk has to be about sex, sexual parts, and sexual activity. It can't just be general. They have to know.
I hear you. I'm not disagreeing with you, really, Jim. All I'm saying is because of grooming and because of sexual attraction and because of the way predators sometimes work, it isn't always going to involve a touch. It's not always going to involve someone touching them in the vaginal area or in the groin area. And so that's why I like to use the word uncomfortable, because kids instinctively know if someone shows them their penis or does it, that makes them feel uncomfortable.
I know, but why not have the conversation about the penis and the vagina?
Agree. I'm not saying not to.
The point is that many kids won't feel uncomfortable. Many kids, it happens. Children who are sexually victimized sometimes feel pleasure from it. It can be a pleasurable thing that happens.
No, I don't disagree with that.
But it is no less a crime. And so we have to talk to them specifically about sexual victimization, about sexual contact, about sexual things. And if they know this stuff and you talk to them in a loving, kind, caring, supportive way, say, you know, Mommy and Daddy will always love you no matter what happens. We're here for you. We want to protect you. And we're going to talk about this. And unless the parents can be comfortable talking to the kids about it, the kids are not going to be comfortable talking to them about it. And the knowledge of it will help protect them. Because if someone tries to groom them, if someone asks the question, do you talk to your parents about sex? Did your parents teach you about sex? And sex is something the children have heard about but never learned anything about. If they don't know anything about it, they'll probably say, no, we never talk about it. We're not allowed to talk about it. We can't say those words. Well, I'm going to teach you. That can happen.
But yeah, sure. Forbidden terms are very attractive to children, obviously.
Yet if the child says, oh, yeah, we talk about it all the time. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know all my body parts. I know nobody's supposed to touch me or do anything or talk to me about this. So I'm going to go home and tell them about what you just said.
That would be a well-armored child, right, Jim?
It would be. And Joelle Castaix wrote a book called The Well-Armored Child, and I definitely recommend it. It is a very good book on teaching how to armor your child against this rather than leaving them supposedly naive and I believe very unprotected. The more
vulnerable,
open and
we
relaxed,
don't want kids to be.
Right. Yeah. The more open and relaxed we can be about talking about this, the whole spectrum of it is going to help prevent it from happening. Would you rather go through the uncomfortable process of being able to talk to your child and have your child talk to you about sex and sexual behavior? Or would you rather find out later that they were sexually victimized? I think most people would choose the former rather than the latter. And unfortunately, most children who go through it will not tell their parents about it.
No. Ever. And Jim, this daycare case in Oregon is such, the Stinky Feet Daycare is such a terrible but important example, because this happened between 2016 and 2018, not 1992 or 1975. We know what's happening to children. We know where sexual predators want to work. We know where they want to be around. what is going on in these regulating bodies that they appear to put children last. Why as a country are we putting children last when it comes to their own protection? I don't understand it. I think it's an epidemic, and I don't understand why more people don't take children's allegations seriously enough to get that guy out of the home, shut that daycare down, and get those kids protected. Well, so what they've done now is five of these families have sued, not just the daycare center, but they've sued the Department of Education, which was part of the certification process, and the Department of Human Services, I think they call it there. So these government agencies might now be on the hook for their own negligent behavior in failing to prevent some of this abuse from happening. And there's all sorts of very complicated legal issues about, you know, sovereignty and not being immune from suit. Certain agencies, governments are immune from suit sometimes. I don't know what the laws are in Oregon. I hope those agencies are not immune from suit, even though it means us, the taxpayer, could be on the hook for a settlement. But what else can we do? What else is it going to take? Putting the bad guy in prison isn't enough, because the people who did it are still out there. Remember that case, Jim, what is it? I could hardly watch this Netflix special, The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez. Mm. Those Department of Child Protective Services, I can't remember what they called it in California in that particular area, but Child Protective Services over and over and over again failed Gabriel Fernandez, who was suffering so much abuse in his little life before he finally succumbed to a horrific beating by his mother and stepfather. I think he was the stepfather or boyfriend, I can't remember. And those workers were actually prosecuted initially by the DA's office under a criminal negligence standard. And every single one of those cases was dropped. Those people who failed to protect Gabriel Fernandez at every turn should have been held accountable. But what was the message the system gave them? You really didn't do anything wrong. That child is 6 feet under because they didn't do their damn job. I mean, my message to everyone out there who is working in the child protection field, whatever your job, do your damn job. Lots of people are trying hard. Lots of prosecutors and agents like us, Jim, devoted, dedicated to kids. But then there are some to whom maybe it's just a paycheck, or they don't really care, or they're overburdened or overworked or whatever it is. But don't make children pay the price for whatever your problem is. You're in a position to do something. Do your damn job.
Right. And the American Academy of Pediatrics says that parents, when they're considering putting their child in a daycare center, should ask three or four questions. One, what's the discipline policy there? Two, are they licensed? Three, are there any outstanding violations? Okay. That means unresolved violations, violations that haven't been closed. I would add significantly to that, and do they do background checks on their employees? Well, I think Francie and I would add significantly to this list.
Yes.
Are there any allegations about anyone, employed or otherwise, that has access to children at this daycare? Good question.
Yeah.
Will there ever be any instance where any child has only one caregiver present at any time? Yeah. What happens when a child is sick? What happens when a child has to go to the bathroom? Are there still two caregivers right there with them at all times? They should be. Here's a good one. Can the parents personally interview each person who will have access to any child? Why not?
Important. That seems important.
If anyone wants to spend more time with your child than you can stand doing, it's a major red flag.
Well, and I would add one last thing, Jim. I would add video camera coverage. I have here what I call my pet cam. I bought it from Amazon. I can't remember the name, the model or whatever, but it was like $49. And when Kevin and I go on vacation, we have a pet sitter. She's wonderful. I trust her, but I like to know what my kitty cats are doing and that there's not like a fire or something in the place. So we turn it around and it shows our whole place. And I, because I'm an obsessed pet owner, I every day check to make sure I can see them walking to and from their food dishes or going up the stairs or whatever. And it makes me feel better. And for $49, you can get these kinds of video systems. Now, there's no excuse in my mind for a daycare center not having the kind of video coverage that parents can get secure logins, log in and look and see what their kids are doing at any moment of the day.
I remember
and
one
that
case.
Should include going in and out. Obviously, you don't want a camera in the bathroom, but going in and out of the bathroom, you want to know who is escorting your child around that facility and what are they doing? And if they don't have that, I think that's a massive red flag.
Right. And there was a case where a child went to music lessons, and I think either they set up his watch or they had a camera on him, and the music teacher refused to let him wear a camera to his lessons. Well, take that kid out of those lessons.
That's
and
right.
Investigate
just forget
that
it.
Teacher. Yeah.
That's what is right. The forget point? It.
Yeah.
Yes,
I mean,
agreed.
Look, there is no limit to how tricky these offenders will be. And by tricky, I mean, they will play off like they are good people. They love your child. They want to really help you take care of your child. There's no way to know just by looking at someone that they could be, whether or not they're sexually interested in children. And frankly, you can't know that. But if you have to leave your child with someone, make sure your children are well armored. Make sure they
That's
know
right.
what they need to know to help protect themselves and talk to them every day about it.
Every day about it.
If you make it routine, it won't be traumatic. It will just
That's
be
right.
a normal thing. And start as early as you can possibly do it. Age appropriate, supportive, calm, loving discussions back and forth. Let them, give them permission to use words that describe their body parts and sexual activity.
That's right. It's very important, Jim. And I like to say, I think it's a shame, but the truth of the matter is, no one loves your child the way that you do. And you have got to take responsibility for making sure wherever you put your child is a safe place to put them. You know, it's hard. Things like the Uvalde school shooting happen and this daycare case. And, you know, I'm sure all the parents are distraught because they didn't really understand. They didn't know. Well, that's what we're trying to do in this podcast is make sure that people know what questions you should be asking, what red flags you should be looking for. And above all, we hope sincerely that everyone involved in your child's life is loving and friendly and teaches them good lessons and things they need to know in life. And most people are. But there are those out there that are not like that, like this Quinlan Hardin, who I think, Jim, deserves one of my patented pine box sentences. And I hope that's what he gets. And I hope the lawsuit against both the daycare and the agencies succeed and that these victims get some recompense for what they had to go through.
All right. Well said. Well, I don't know how many people out there really understand the power that they have to help prevent child sexual victimization. Everybody can help. People that don't want to help are probably not good people. But everybody can help if everyone is aware, if everyone talks about it, and no one's afraid to discuss these things openly. If somebody is making, you feel uncomfortable around your kids, talk to other parents about it. Talk to wherever they work. Speak about it. Don't think it's such a horrific thing to talk about. Secrecy only helps them. Darkness
That's right.
helps them. We don't want to help them at all.
No. Agreed. Well said, Jim. Well, right. Everyone out there, I hope this has helped some, and good luck to all those children involved in the terrible stinky feet daycare situation out in Oregon. Our hearts go out to them.
Absolutely. And their families. And to any of you who are listening, if you or someone you know has been through this, either at stinky daycare or anywhere else, the best thing to do is to report it, because unfortunately, if these are offenders that are sexually interested in children, the chances are they're going to keep offending. And there are many other victims out there. You're not alone. And you can still grow up and lead a great life and not have problems and, you know, get past it and, you know, survive and thrive. I have, and I know many, many other people who have. And it's unfortunate, but probably about a quarter of the population that's alive right now has been victimized in that way. And it's just not something that we need to keep living with. All right, till next time, thank you for listening to Best Case, Worst Case. Signing off.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production, produced by Francie Hakes, Josh Murphy, and Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Matt Gergel. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba and hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness to Light can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's d2l.org.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.